What's up, all you heretics? Welcome to the Religion of Speed podcast. I'm Matt Overstreet.
And I'm Chris Huffman.
And we have been talking already for 45 minutes, Chris, so I figure we should probably start the podcast.
That's a pretty good warm-up.
Yeah, it's quite a warm-up. So we were just talking about like crazy stories, car-related stories, and how pretty much the fact of the more you know about something, the less you kind of know about it.
Right.
And the more ignorant you are about it, the higher your confidence that you are correct and stuff.
Right, right. The more you learn about something, when your confidence drops, which is funny because it has weird effects on your psyche when you lose confidence in something.
Right.
Even if you are the most qualified in the person in the room.
Right.
You may not sound like you are.
Yeah. So we were talking about that in terms of automotive repair and how, like me as a tech that's been doing this for, oh geez, I don't even want it, 15 years now? What year is this?
2021.
Yeah, I graduated in 2005. So pretty much 15, 16 years. Man. You know, I have some experience with this stuff, but still there's a lot of things I'm like, well, I'm not sure. Like, I'm not going to say definitively that this is what it is because, you know, I've seen a lot of things. While other people see it online, I see it on Facebook all the time.
Yeah.
Where it's like, somebody be like, hey, I got this code in my car. And somebody's like, it's the blank. It's the mass airflow. And I'm like, well, that could be a lot of things. That could
be
a mass airflow. But honestly, that's not the first thing I'd go with.
Right.
But so speaking of things and why testing is so important and why you can't just jump to conclusions, we had a BMW in the shop yesterday.
Okay.
And we put air filters in it. So it was air filters and a brake flush. This was a twin turbo V8. BMW 5 Series.
Okay, the newer one. That twin turbo motor that ends up torn apart a lot in your shop.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a junk engine, but it's when it runs, it's really good.
Yeah.
So anyways, we just put some CarQuest air filters in it, pull it outside, customer goes to drive it off, and it's running like garbage.
Wow, from air filters.
Well, we weren't sure at first.
Yeah.
We'll get back to that. So it was misfiring, and you could just smell it was running rich like crazy. And, you know, we were kind of pulling our hair out with this, like, well, what do we do? Because we gave it to the new guy, but the new guy had left. This was, like, at 6 o'clock.
Okay.
So we're like, did he do something wrong? We're going over all his work, you know. Like, I think one of the clamps was, like, ever so slightly loose. Like, if you really pulled on it, you could get the boot off of there.
Right.
But with a lot of effort. So I'm like, that alone, like, that wouldn't cause it. It's not leaking any air past that, for sure. So we're just like, I don't know. So we look at the fuel trims, and the fuel trims, it says it's pulling fuel out of the car. So it's negative.
Okay.
Do you know how fuel trims work?
Not much, really. I've seen some of the diagrams when you and Chris were diagnosing stuff.
In the most basic sense, of the fuel trims are what the car is telling you if it has to add extra fuel or pull fuel from what it expects.
Okay. From like a base map.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
So, it'll read how much is coming in, how much air is coming in through the mass airflow. It'll pretty much inject a certain amount of fuel because of that. It'll read the air-fuel ratio in the exhaust. And it's like, oh, hey, that was too much fuel for that much air, I guess. For whatever reason, I'll pull some fuel back.
So, if a car's pulling fuel, that means that the computer thinks the vehicle's running rich.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's what was going on here. The vehicle's like, man, I'm running super rich. Like, I have to pull a ton of fuel. We're like, both me and Chris kind of came to the same conclusion at the same time. We're like, air filters? Like, fuck it. Let's just try putting the old filters in and see what happens.
Yeah.
Old filters, BMW OEM filters, back in it, runs great.
Wow. So the CarQuest filters just fooled the computer.
Yeah, we're still not exactly sure why. Because if you look at them, they look identical.
Yeah.
Like, I was trying to find, because it's a weird shape. So there's like the panel filter and then like this weird plastic surround on it.
Okay.
That goes into the airbox. Really weird design.
So an expensive filter.
Very expensive. Of course it is. It's a BMW. But yeah, we were looking at that and couldn't see any changes. So there's only two conclusions we have. One is the paper element is actually like too thick and restricting airflow.
Okay.
But I doubt that. And two, there's actually a shape difference that we just didn't see that is causing the airflow to hit the mass airflow sensor in a strange way.
Like an indiscernible shape difference.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, maybe the material You think the material would be different, possibly sourcing paper material from a different location?
Maybe. Yeah. I'm not sure.
That's wild. And have you seen that happen a lot with other vehicles?
That's the first time I've ever seen that in 15 years of working.
That is wild.
Yeah. I've never seen an air filter cause an issue like that. The only time I've ever seen an air filter cause a drivability issue was on a Mitsubishi that was completely caked with dirt. Like, literally, you couldn't see through it. It was just a mud ball at that point.
Just a solid ball of dirt.
Yeah. So, it's like, then, of course, yeah, you're restricting air. But, yeah, the only thing I could think of is just the shape of the airbox, the shape of the filter, and the mass airflow is right after that airbox. So, if that's causing the airflow to do something funky and just kind of go around or, you know, however it's hitting the mass airflow wrong, so
yeah,
the engine can't compute the air coming to the engine correctly.
Yeah.
Because I have seen it on the older Mercedes. You got this big airbox that sits on top of the engine, and the mass airflow and throttle body are on the back of the engine kind of facing up towards the hood.
Okay, so that the ducting actually has to make a 90-degree turn before it hits the airbox.
Yeah, the airbox does that 90, and you bolt the whole thing to the mass airflow.
Okay.
But if you don't latch it down correctly, it causes air turbulence and disturbance in that mass airflow, and it will run rich then.
Wow. Okay. Like, because yeah. There's a leak somewhere, essentially, where air is being pulled from somewhere that's not straight through the filter.
It's not. Yeah, I'm not sure if it's got to be a leak. It's got to be because it's sucking air up and around the mass airflow there. Because everybody knows, like, an air leak after a mass airflow will cause a car to run lean, because that's air that's entering the engine that the ECU has not accounted for.
So there's more air, so it throws the ratio off.
Yeah.
Okay.
But this is before the MAF, and it's just, that's why, like, mass airflows oftentimes have, like, that screen in front of them.
Yeah, especially the big older ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't see that much anymore, but that's just to keep the airflow straight through there.
Hmm. So I always thought the screen had something to do with the sensor. It's just ducting.
Yeah, it's just to even out that airflow, make it flat across the mass airflow so it can properly determine how much air is coming in the engine.
Wow. That's crazy, because I've seen some big honking mass airflow units, and it's funny to think that most of that is actually not the electronic unit.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and that's a problem too. Some people will upgrade to a quote-unquote bigger MAF housing, and it just throws everything off, because now your mass airflow is kind of out of the center of the airway,
yeah,
and it can't get a proper reading.
Yeah, so that where the airflow that it's designed to calculate for is you're changing it.
Right.
And it looks like an upgrade, but
right, but it's actually not. It could cause drivability issues.
Yeah, that's crazy. And with these computerized vehicles, just how minute those differences that they've designed those to account for is.
Right.
Like just changing a shape of something.
I think that's why, for the longest time, people avoided mass airflow, like doing mass airflow for aftermarket ECUs. Everybody ran speed density, which is MAP sensor, your pressure sensor in the intake manifold, and an intake air temp sensor. Because you can discern a lot of information just how much pressure is in the intake manifold and how warm is the air coming in.
Right, because if you know how warm the air is and the pressure, and you know how heavy air is, then you can calculate the volume of air moving in.
Exactly. And so people were doing that for a long time, but I feel like a lot of people kind of are moving back to MAFs for a while because it is way more accurate.
Yeah. Because it's just reading that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're reading the mass of the air coming into the engine. So, yeah, it's the point of that whole thing was, A, that's a crazy story, and B, you'd never fucking know, man. You just got to test everything.
You can't just guess.
No.
Yeah.
That's why when I see people, you know, being armchair diagnostic technicians on Facebook, I just shake my head. Like, I'm past the point where I try to argue with them, because that's useless. Yeah, it took me like 10 years, but I finally learned arguing on the internet is useless.
Yeah, it doesn't serve any purpose but to make you sad.
Yeah. I get upset and then that's it. That's the only thing that happens. But yeah, I've given up arguing with those people, but it's like, you can't do that. People want to ask all the time on the Facebook groups and or forums and stuff, hey, my car is doing this, what can it be?
Yeah.
It can be a lot of things.
Yeah, because the code points to a system, not necessarily one flaw.
Right.
Yeah, when I, at the auto parts store, they made sure to tell us, like, you cannot diagnose based on this.
Right.
Like, you can't make, you know, you can make mild suggestions.
Yeah.
You know, when I would read somebody's codes and it, you know, says catalyst system threshold below efficiency, be like, well, this, you know, this could be your catalytic converter. This could be your O2 sensor. This could be something else.
Yeah. And but, like I tell people with that code specifically, you know, it's like, listen, 95-ish% of the time,
yeah,
it's a cat.
Yeah.
But there's two things. One, could be an air leak, could be an O2 sensor, or the other thing is, what caused that catalytic converter to fail?
Right.
Converters do fail on their own occasionally, but a lot of times there's something else causing that. Running rich is usually a big one, or vibration, or, you know, What happened?
Right. Something damaged that component.
Right.
Yeah. Whether it's an excess of fuel coming through and destroying it, or whether you ran into something.
Right. Yeah. On their own, catalytic converters do not wear out.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Just on their own. So there always has to be something.
Yeah. Pretty much. I mean, it could be like a manufacturing defect or something, or, you know, manufacturing problem that causes things down the road. But generally, they don't wear out.
It's interesting that it makes sense why people are stealing all these cats from older vehicles.
Yeah.
Because if they, you know, if the vehicle doesn't have an issue.
Right. Well, in older vehicles, you use different materials too.
They use more precious metals.
Yeah, they're worth more.
Did you hear about the guy who got crushed under the Prius in California?
I shouldn't be happy about that, but I'm happy about that.
It's hard to feel sad when he was under there stealing it.
Right.
Also, he trusted his life to a scissor jack.
Yeah, that was, I mean, if you're in a position where you're stealing catalytic converters for a living, you probably didn't make the best life choices in the first place. But yeah, trusting your life to a scissor jack.
Yeah.
Never do that, people.
Yeah. If you're stealing catalytic converters, make sure to bring jack stands.
Yes. That's the lesson here. Oh, man. I saw an ad on Facebook, like it was a targeted ad clearly, from some company here in Colorado that's like, we buy catalytic converters. And I'm like, oh, I have to go to the comments section.
Yeah.
It was just people flaming that company like fucking crazy.
Right.
They're just like, you're a part of the fucking problem. And it's like, yeah, they are.
Because who has a bunch of catalytic converters just to sell?
Right.
Right. There's the one scrap guy who goes and picks stuff up at garages.
Yeah.
And then there's the people grinding them out from under SUVs.
Yeah. And especially Priuses.
Yes, because they don't run their gas motors as often.
They don't run their gas motors as often, and they use more material in their converters to make them extra clean. Because they want it to be as little emissions, tailpipe emissions as possible.
And it's funny. I was watching some Canadian coverage of catalytic converter theft, and I heard a Prius that sounded just like that one that came
into the shop. That one, they towed that out of the shop. I don't know what they ended up doing with it.
I mean, the catalytic converter was on intergalactic back order.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that thing was never coming in.
I wanted to try buying it from them, and I was going to try to buy some, like, kind of shady, out-of-state, you know, catalytic converter and try to do that and see, like, because that's the thing that sucks. As a mechanic, I can't sell you a catalytic converter unless it's compliant to all the Colorado laws.
Right, which just changed as of this year.
Right. As an individual, I could still get on eBay and order a shitty part.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, the government doesn't care about that. So, that puts mechanics in a really hard spot there. But, granted, I don't know how much I trust those cheapy eBay cats anyways.
But in this case, you were just trying to try to get the Prius back on the road.
Right, exactly.
Sell it to some county that does an emissions test.
Exactly. That too. Just straight pipe it and sell it to somebody in Weld County. There you go. Problem solved.
I saw a $1,300 Forester on Craigslist with a manual transmission and 112,000 miles on it. And it was $1,300 because it needed a cat. And I'm just like, I could buy this and sell it somewhere else.
Right.
For a markup, you know, I could sell, you know, or maybe even get really, really lucky and run some cataclean through it.
Yeah.
And maybe that would work.
So I just had to weld in a catalytic converter on an older Forester because this is another cool story. I don't know if we're going to get to anything on our docket today. We're just going to be bullshitting, but
story
that's fine.
Story time.
Yeah. So older Forester, can't remember the year exactly, came in with catalyst code P0420. We can get a California spec converter for it, but it was like $1,300.
And that's cost. Actually cheap.
Our cost.
Yeah. Oh, your cost. So yeah. Marked up to
$3,000. Yeah, exactly. And so, of course, they didn't want to do that. But we did find a Magnaflow weld-in one that was California compliant.
Okay.
And it was like, it was only like a few hundred bucks, a couple hundred bucks, something. I can't remember what it was exactly. So we got all the stuff so I can properly do MIG welding now.
Oh, nice.
Yep. We got gas. We got, because I was just using the flux core on that little welder before, which works, but I wanted, like, if we're going to do this for customers, I want nicer welds.
So yeah.
Got the full MIG set up. I cut out the old converter and welded this one in. But what was crazy, when I cut out the old one, it had a hole straight through it, just dug right through it. And I was like, well, that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen them kind of rattle themselves apart and stuff, but never, yeah. Usually not just like a hole straight through.
And it didn't look like it was machined or drilled or anything?
No, it's just like, well, I found what had caused it because I looked down the exhaust pipe to make sure, actually, I was looking for the catalyst material to make sure it wasn't like jammed in the exhaust pipe down there.
Yeah.
And I looked down there and I see something. I'm like, what is that? Grab my pliers, you know, pull this thing out. It's a 14 millimeter half inch drive impact socket.
That poked a hole in this cat.
Yeah, that was after the first cat and before the secondary catalytic converter. So the only way that could get there is to drill its way through the converter and get stuck in the exhaust pipe.
Holy crap. How did it get into the exhaust from the beginning? That's what I want to know.
That is a great question. Our theory is it's a 12 point 14 millimeter.
Okay.
Which is also the size you need to use for Subaru head bolts.
So somebody did the head gaskets on the Subaru.
Dropped their gasket because they probably left the exhaust or the manifold on there like I always do.
So just dropped it into the open exhaust manifold.
And totally either forgot about it or didn't notice. And it eventually made its way through the manifold into the cat, rattled and burrowed its way through there.
That is one of the best examples of automotive archaeology I've ever heard. Right? I
know. It's like you could just, we're like, how did that wind up there?
Yeah. It's like, where did you come from?
And it's like, I use half inch 12 point on whenever I take the head bolts off. So
yeah,
it makes perfect sense.
And it's a Subaru, so the heads come off on a fairly regular basis throughout its life.
Right.
Yeah.
The great part is it's a snap-on socket, so I kept it.
That's awesome. Now you get to think about that every time you use that socket.
I know. Like, I remember where I got this.
That's a really nice socket.
Right?
And, you know, that actually, you should let Snap-on know. It's like, it can survive this.
Right? Yeah. It was a little, like, you know, charred, but otherwise it's in good shape, so.
Yeah, still works.
It's been heat treated many, many times now.
It's gone through a few cycles.
So, we've been talking a lot about emissions and stuff and catalytic converters, so I guess it's time to talk about the RPM Act.
Yes. Sadly, the EPA is attempting to enforce a new interpretation of the Clean Air Act.
Yep.
And because of that, it is possible that it will be either extremely difficult or completely illegal to modify your intake or exhaust system on any vehicle. They're attempting to apply this to vehicles that are even trailered to the track and used for off-road use only, which would kill grassroots motorsports as we know it.
I mean, it'd kill motorsports in general.
Yeah, because, you know, almost every, even DTM, even, you know, German touring car, they're using engines that were once production engines.
Right, yeah. At that point, the only racing would be allowed is like some sort of open wheel racing or NASCAR, maybe, you know, stuff that's not based on any sort of production car at all.
Yeah. And not just, you know, we're not even talking about welding up a tube chassis and putting an LS in there. If that LS was designed for street use, then you can't modify its, you know, EVAP system, its intake system, its exhaust, which for track use, that would really kill grassroots motorsports. You know, you're right. It would kill even higher level motorsports unless, you know, you could afford to spend $1 billion developing something from the ground up, which, as we know, most of us can't do.
Nope. No, I mean, most racing is grassroots racing in some form or fashion. You know, it's a production based car that's been modified for racing.
Yeah.
So the one thing I do want to clear up is the RPM Act has been going around a lot lately of, you know, hey, contact or sign this, contact your representatives, tell them to support the RPM Act. The only problem is the RPM Act does not actually help most of us.
Right. It only helps the off-road use.
Yeah.
Which most of us are modifying these vehicles and still driving them around on the street. And this is from SEMA, the automotive lobbying group.
Yep.
You know, they do what they can to try to protect our rights as gearheads to do what we love to do. And try to keep the government from regulating us out of existence.
Right.
And it's something. It's better than nothing.
It is better than nothing, but I do just want to highlight, this is right on SEMA's site. This is not from the actual paperwork,
mm-hmm.
Because, of course, that's all legalese and doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But in just plain English, SEMA's website, the RPM Act does not interfere with EPA's authority to enforce against individuals who illegally install race parts on vehicles driven on public roads and highways and the companies that make such products. Tampering with the emission systems of a motor vehicle used on public roads is a clear violation of the Clean Air Act.
And, you know, that's most of us.
Right.
Most of us are putting a cold air intake on our cars. You know, that's the first mod that most people do when they buy a car they want to mod.
Right.
The cold air intake is something that anybody with a screwdriver and a little bit of patience can get done.
Yeah.
And it's sad. It really is sad to see this because, you know, we've been talking about how electric cars are the future of racing.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely the truth. But that technology is still really new. And most of us can't afford to buy a Tesla and gut it for track use right. in our garage. Even a used wrecked Tesla.
Yeah, those things are still expensive.
Yeah.
And even then, we still want to mess around with our internal combustion engines.
It is, you know. And I know it's going to be a relic, but I'm going to love internal combustion forever.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was, if you go to religionofspeed.com and read my article on the new Polestar 2 that I drove, you know, I do have hope for the future of the automotive world with it converting to electric and stuff. I think we're still going to be able to modify our cars. We're still going to go have fun with them. But like you said, at some point, we're just going to be those old guys with like, no, internal combustion is just so much fun. You know, we like it because it explodes.
Yeah. Harness the power of explosion.
Right. But the thing with EPA's Clean Air Act is like, listen, I think I've talked about this before. I'm a bit of a green thumb. No, that's not the one either, because I can't keep a plant alive to save my life. I'm just a hippie, I guess, in general, a bit of a tree hugger. Like, I like clean, breathable air. I like trees. I like,
yeah, you
know, I like the environment in general. I'm not looking to destroy the environment. But here's the thing. People that are modifying their cars for race use constitute such a tiny, tiny fraction of a percent of global emissions that it's hardly even, like, it's negligible at best. Two, let us still modify our cars. Like, we can still modify our cars and do, if as long as it passes an emissions test. That's my thing. If you put my car on the rollers and it puts down good numbers and is not polluting, then why do you give a shit what I did to it?
Right. Right. It's still working.
Right.
It's still passing.
Yeah, exactly.
And we shouldn't be asking people to put their race cars on rollers.
No, especially not then. But I'm talking about the street cars. Like,
yeah.
There are things that, of course, that would outlaw, of course, if you're doing emissions bypass stuff on diesels.
Yes.
Which is kind of how this started, by the way.
Yes.
Thanks, Diesel Bros. Isn't Diesel Bros a company, too?
So, it was Diesel Bros. Yeah, you're talking about the reality show.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Those guys were their company.
Didn't they get fined?
Of the heavier fines.
Yeah.
And most of the heavier fines were levied at diesel companies.
Yeah.
But, you know, the company that owns FT86 Speed Factory had to pay fines.
Did they?
I heard Apexy had to pay fines.
Really?
You know, it's not just the diesel guys are getting hit by this. And, you know, I saw somebody rolling coal on Hamden on the way here. And I'm like, you know, had to put my air conditioning on recirc for a minute.
Right.
So I'm not a fan of the coal rolling diesels either.
Yeah.
Especially when, you know, it's regulating that is kind of taking a bat to my hobby.
Right. I kind of view the coal rolling diesels as kind of like the takeovers, street racing takeovers.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not necessarily completely against everything you're doing. Like, right. Okay, the kid's going out and playing with cars. I'm cool with that.
Right.
But then you go take it a step too far, and now you're causing bad attention.
Yes.
It's the same with diesels. Like, I'm cool with mining diesels. Mining diesels is awesome. You want 2,000 foot-pounds of torque?
Yeah.
Yes, of course I do.
You want to drag a house off of its foundations?
Yeah, of course. But then you have to go out and do the 12 and a half inch stack out of the hood,
right?
You know, and blow a bunch of black smoke everywhere and make all the Karens mad. And guess who has a big voice all the time? All the Karens do. So
Karens are the most represented lobbying group in America.
You can't get away from them. So, you know, I'm always torn, because it's like, yes, I want us to make sure we're taking care of the environment, but also you're going after the wrong people.
Yes.
Like,
it's too wide of a net that's being cast.
Yeah. I mean, even if every auto enthusiast in this country completely disabled all their emission stuff, took their catalytic converters out and all that stuff.
Right.
Like, we're such a small percentage of people. We're not going to make that big of a change.
Yeah, it's going to be less than 10% of the pollution.
Oh, way less.
Yeah.
Way less. Like, it's like the majority, if you go to EPA's site and look at the breakdown of where CO2 emissions is coming from, a lot of it is from agriculture and large transportation, like shipping, trucking, stuff like that.
Yes. Yeah.
The actual percentage of just like people like us driving cars normally is a smaller fraction. And then you take the percentage of that that's enthusiasts, and it's like, why are you? This is typical government shit, where they're like, we're going to focus on this really tiny thing we know we can take care of.
Right.
Because we're getting too much money from the big thing. So we're not going to focus on that.
Because the priorities are always, it always boils down to money.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's always marketed to you under the guise of safety or security or cleanliness.
Yeah. I mean, this makes for good headlines like, oh, we're getting rid of all those diesel trucks that you don't like and all those loud tuners out at night in the street, you know.
Yeah.
It's a feel good thing.
It is.
To crack down on this shit.
And it's going to make a lot of the people who listen to our podcast feel pretty bad.
Yeah.
It's going to be really sad if a lot of this stuff gets applied. And what I really think it's going to accomplish is it's going to create a lot of criminals.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's not going to stop people from doing the things that they want to do.
No, no.
Especially people who mod cars. We've talked about that on this podcast before. People who know how to turn wrenches are not the people who will readily line up to obey your rules.
No, no, we're generally a defiant bunch, but I'm kind of torn on whether to support the RPM Act or not. I guess it is good that like we're trying to make it so that way we can solve race cars at least.
Yeah.
But that doesn't really help the industry, because a large majority of the car parts that these companies sell to keep afloat don't go on race cars. They go on street cars. That's just the reality of it.
Yes.
There's not enough race cars in the world for these people to make a business out of this.
And we need these mid-level tuning companies, because they solve problems that sometimes the bigger companies don't want to tackle.
Yeah. Or, you know, they tackle cars that the big companies don't want to tackle.
Yeah.
Like, even my Fiesta, like, they didn't really make that many of those. It's a popular car, but they didn't make that many. So a lot of big companies just didn't really make parts for them because there wasn't a big enough market.
Yeah.
You know, so it was reliant on the smaller companies to come up and be like, no, we got you. We got your parts.
Right.
You know.
Because their business model allows them to focus on more niche markets like that.
Exactly.
But that means that they also don't have the resources to get everything they make CARB certified.
Yeah. But at the same time, like, okay, I go buy a ported turbo from my Fiesta and put that on there. That's illegal. I can't do that. Also, does that really change the emissions?
No, not really.
Not really.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, sure, if I, you know, tune it up to 300 horsepower and give it all the beans, then I guess it's going to make a little more emissions because it's putting in more fuel. But, like, that's not how I drive it most of the time anyways. So, it would pass rollers. You wouldn't even be able to tell if it was on the rollers.
Well, and even if you tuned yours up to 300 horsepower, you'd be putting off less emissions than a diesel truck with a DEF tank.
Yeah. It's all just... I'm all about protecting the environment, but let's do this in a smart way and not just be stupid about it.
Right. Let's not punish a lot of people who really aren't doing anything wrong.
Right.
You know, people who are innovative people. And racing is a technology booster.
Yeah.
You know, because torture testing things, finding where they fail in ways that conventional use doesn't, helps us improve those products in the future.
Yeah.
And when you kill that, it, you know, it's not only the enthusiasts that suffer. It's the entire industry, and by extension, anyone who utilizes that industry.
Yeah. And as it sits right now, we're still an automotive-based society.
We are. We are. We're an internal combustion-based society.
Yeah. Well, that too. I just mean, like, to do... You want to transport goods. You want to transport yourself.
Yeah.
You know, anything. It's all road-based, car-based people. Yeah.
Especially here in America.
Yeah.
We don't have the public transit system we need to, you know, to for a lot of people to just stop driving cars.
Right. Yeah, that too. Okay. You want to start punishing the little guy for owning cars, basically, which is what all these laws are doing. They're right. Punishing everyday people for just living their life.
Yeah.
How about, okay, then give us some public transportation. Oh, we don't have the money for that. Okay, why?
Right.
Oh, well, we got to go bomb Syria again.
Or yeah.
Whatever, like we were talking about earlier. But,
yeah.
You know, it's just like, I don't, they're just punishing the little people for just living their lives.
Because they don't have the resources to fight back.
Because they don't, yeah, exactly. Because the big companies are just going to fight back and, you know, bribe their way to the laws that keep them polluting everything.
Yeah. So,
I don't know.
It's a really scary situation to see something like this because it is where we've dedicated our lives.
Yeah, that too. And it could easily just be gone in like a couple of years.
It could be. It could be regulated out of existence, you know, relegated to a few backwaters that don't obey the laws.
Right.
And I will absolutely move to a backwater if I have to.
Yeah, I mean, we'll go there.
Yeah.
Religion of speed will go underground.
Yeah.
Underground religion. Religion of Speed Underground. I'm just imagining the cover of Need for Speed Underground.
Yeah. that's funny.
Which, kind of speaking of that game, I don't actually know if DMX was in on either any of those soundtracks, but you hear DMX died?
I know, it's sad.
Yeah.
It is. I know he was in some of the Fast and Furious soundtracks.
Yeah. Well, he was part of the Rough Riders back in the day, wasn't he?
Was he?
I think. Wasn't he part of that?
Honestly, I don't know. Early 2000s rap is a real hole in my knowledge.
I mean, same, but that's a sad thing. But we'll move on from non-sad stuff. Just I will say, if you are opposed to the EPA cracking down on us, you know, support the RPM Act, I guess, but also tell SEMA it's not enough.
Right. And tell your congressman it's not enough.
Yeah. Tell them to stop infringing on our rights to do stuff. And I'm not saying that we should be allowed to just like rip out catalytic converters and do whatever the fuck we want.
Right.
But there's a middle ground, like you were saying earlier with stuff.
There is. There's a middle ground. You know, going too extreme in one direction or another, you're always going to step on somebody.
Right.
We do absolutely need to work on cleaning up our air. Just removing lead from gasoline in the 70s. I think we talked about that.
Like, yeah.
Homicides went down because people weren't as aggressive.
Right. Yeah. Which is fucking crazy.
Yeah, that's pretty ludicrous. But it's just the fact that we have to constantly fight just for our little piece,
yeah,
of happiness, you know. And you know, one day this isn't going to be an issue because most of the cars that we build in our garages are going to be electric.
Yeah.
But that technology is still so new, it hasn't proliferated around to the point where your average person can just build that in their garage and buy 7 electric motors to just keep on their shelves.
Right.
You know, it's we're not there yet. We're getting there.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, motorsports needs a little bit of leeway. We need a little bit of middle ground in order to progress and remain. Otherwise, it could all be extinguished until we get to that point. And when the technology is there, we may not be able to, there may not be the drive.
Yeah.
Because the sport would have been killed already.
Yeah, maybe. But then again, I've seen enough stuff of men, and I say men because this is just it's a very man thing. Let's be real here. Men will modify and race pretty much anything.
That's true.
You know, it's like we need to tinker with it because we think we can do it better than a team of engineers.
Yeah.
And then we need to prove that we did it better by racing it against other men.
Yep. And then we break and usually prove ourselves wrong.
Yeah, this is true. And I'm not saying that as a sexist thing. It just, women aren't that stupid. So we just got this like monkey beating on our chest thing, you know?
Yeah. We want to tinker.
Yeah.
Even if we're making it worse.
Exactly. That's what I always like. I always joke about that with my Fiesta for a while. I was driving around with like low tire light on because I didn't have tire pressure sensors in. My check engine light was on and like just like a bunch of warning lights on. I'm like, I made this car better.
It says it's worse. No, it's better. Trust me.
No, it is. It's fine. Okay. Well, moving on from that, like I said, I'll put some resources in the show notes of ways you can, you know, contact your representatives and also tell SEMA, hey, let's make this better. But moving on from that, we're going to talk about a bunch of ways you can go racing right now for cheap. Because last week, we got to talk about other stuff. I totally forgot to do the racing segment.
Yeah, there was a lot of news, though.
There was a lot of news.
Yeah.
So this time, I'm not bringing you just one, and I'm not just making two for last. We're doing three events you can do now.
Three budget racing events.
Yep, that you could do this summer, technically. One of these is Colorado-based. A couple of these are kind of nationwide. So wherever you are, you should be able to find something. The first one I want to talk about is, this one's been going for a while. This is Grassroots Motorsports Magazine's $2,000 challenge. This was originally started in the year 2000. Actually, I think it was 98 it started.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Because I think, or 99, because I think I have a magazine still somewhere that it was the 1999 challenge.
Well, 99 was still the 2000 model year.
Yeah, there you go. But so they used to do it just every year. Your budget was the year.
Yeah.
Now it's just a $2,000 budget. And the thing is, you have to build a car that will do an autocross, drag race, and a concourse.
This concourse is, I really think that makes this interesting. Because anybody can, you know, not anybody, but a lot of people can build stuff that can autocross and drag race. Two very different disciplines, but, you know, an autocross car can drag race if a drag car can't always autocross.
Yeah, that's a good point.
but making it pretty enough for a concourse d'elegance is another thing entirely.
And that's kind of what I think separates this from like a Lemons. Because Lemons, it's almost more like the bigger the shit pile that you show up in, the better.
Yeah,
like the worse it looks, the better.
Yeah, you've got like a ton of street cred if you show up in just a rusty bathtub.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody has raced an actual rusty bathtub there. But this one, yeah, not only does it have to turn and go fast in a straight line, it also has to, you know, look pretty good.
Yeah.
And that actually accounts for a good, I don't know if it's a third. I don't know if they divide it into quite thirds, but like, you know, if you're not the fastest of the autocross, not the fastest of the drag racing, but you built a really cool looking car,
yeah,
they can make you win the event. So, which I think is cool.
Yeah, that's an interesting element. I would pay to see a concourse judge look at the Franken Miata.
Yeah.
just a strike here, strike here. There's a hole in your hood. Strike here.
I don't know. I follow those guys on Instagram, the Eyesore Racing Team that built the Franken Miata. That thing is looking worse and worse every year. Oh my God. It's just, it's like so many colors now. Like, I think it's got like 2 gallons of spray paint on it, but
every time it hits something, they just get a body panel off another Miata.
Yeah, and maybe spray paint a little bit, and it's just, but hey, the thing still goes. But this race takes place in Gainesville, Florida, which is the home of Grassroots Motorsports Magazine, and they've been doing it for a long time. So if you want to know more about that event and more about the cars that go that enter it and the drivers and stuff, go over to Grassroots Motorsports forum. They still got a pretty active forum there.
Oh, which that's is cool.
Kind of surprising.
Yeah,
today's
it hasn't all
age.
Moved to Facebook.
Yeah, I know. And also, just that's a good resource in general for grassroots racers. These guys have figured out a lot of things over the years, so you can go back through the forums and ask questions now, and there's a lot of good experts on there.
That's really neat. I'm just happy that there's a forum that's still alive.
Oh, I know, man. I used to spend so much time on forums.
Yeah, I used to learn so much.
Yeah.
And I still haven't really started participating in Facebook.
Yeah, it's harder to participate in, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, even aside from it being Facebook and social media.
Right.
Like, it doesn't save threads the same way, you know, and doesn't, like, build threads and stuff aren't really a thing, and man, I miss forums.
Yeah. You find some cool shit on forums.
Right? if I knew people would actually come to the forum and use it,
yeah,
I'd start another forum, but people just don't use them anymore.
Yeah, it's sad that it's all kind of concentrated like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're in the mood for a kick, you can still read some 5-10-year-old threads. Most of the forums are still up.
They are, yep. I actually did some writing for, what's the Honda forum that everybody uses? I can't remember the name of it now.
There were a lot of them.
Yeah. There was like the main, man, I can't remember now. Honda Tech. There we go.
Okay. I remember this one.
Yeah, so I actually did some writing for Honda Tech for a little bit.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, they're still trying to keep this thing alive, and they were doing articles and stuff and trying to keep the forum alive and stuff. Yeah, look at that. There's me, 2019.
That's awesome.
But I ended up stopping writing for them just for, you know, reasons outside of the forum pretty much. But yeah, there's still a few... I want to call them old guys, but they're probably people all our age.
Well, we are old guys
now. I know. Shut up. there's people out there trying to keep forums alive, but there's definitely a lot of those on Grassroots Motorsports site. So if you want to know how to compete in the $2,000 challenge, go to their website. It is in Gainesville, Florida, so it's a bit of drive for us. But anybody on the East Coast, not too far.
Yeah.
And that is in October 22nd, 23rd.
Oh, so it won't be too hot.
Yeah, exactly. Because October in Florida is like, actually, it's still warm there in October. Yeah. I was there 1 year in October. It's still warm.
But at least it's not as sticky as August.
Yeah, it's very true. But yeah, I do suggest going back through and reading some of the old articles on some of the cars they built. Because unlike Lemon's cars, we have a $500 budget. I feel like the $2,000 budget opens up a lot of doors.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can do decent suspension and brakes. You can do a few things that you really can't do on a $500 budget.
Right, exactly.
And it would just be cruel to do a concourse judge with a $500 budget.
and also, if you want to enter, it's only $200.
That's not bad.
Right? That is not bad.
For dragging and autocross?
Yep. To do some autocross, drag racing, and just hang out with a lot of really interesting people, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure the concourse would actually be a lot of fun walking around and seeing everything everybody put together and meeting the builders, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun.
Because like you said before about racers, we're an ingenuitive bunch.
Yep.
Ingenuitive?
That works.
Yeah, sure. We'll go with that.
That's an adjective.
Clearly, I need a break. So we're going to take a quick break here. And when we come back, we're going to talk about a couple more events and some automotive news.
Sounds good.
Cool. Hey, Heretics. Matt here, interrupting the show for just one brief moment for two reasons. First of all, I want to thank every single one of you listening to this show. If it wasn't for you listening, it really wouldn't be worth it for me and Huffman to make this show every week. So thank you so much for tuning in. And secondly, Religion of Speed needs your help. We are looking to grow more and more every day, and we need you guys to help spread the word. If you can do us a giant favor and share the show on social media, or even better, because you know what, social media, as much as I like social media, I actually hate social media, that's a lie. It's not the greatest way to share things. Actually, go share something with a friend of yours. If we provide entertainment to you in some way, find a friend that you know would also like this form of entertainment, and hopefully, you know, they get a laugh out of their day, they get a little more informed, or maybe even they get out to the track by listening to this show. That's what it's all about. So if you can help us spread the word of the show to a friend, social media, whatever it is. Also, if you could do us a huge favor and like us. Hi, Mochi. Mochi also needs your help. If you can help me and Mochi by joining us on Instagram and Facebook. Mochi, you're throwing me off. You're ruining my ad spot. What are you doing? You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at religionofspeed.co. That's the thing for both of them. I gotta go take care of a cat, but if you can help us spread the word, I would greatly appreciate it, and I'll let you get back to the show. What am I doing? What is this? All right, we're back. Whatever. We're doing a cold open. All right, we're back from the break. I got half a beer in me. You finished yours, so the rest of the podcast should be more casual now.
Let's do it.
All right, back to the motorsports stuff, because like I said, we got a couple more events to cover. This one is just for Colorado, but, you know, anybody that's around here can more than welcome. We welcome other people into our state.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, most of us do. There's the people that do the native stickers on their cars that don't really like other people in their state.
I saw a great sticker that said, not a native, but I got here as fast as I could.
Yeah. I feel like the native people, quote unquote, really hate those stickers.
Yeah. Yeah. It's if you ever do move to Colorado, just ignore the gatekeepers.
Yeah, whatever. They love the fact that it's bringing in money, but man, they hate the fact that there's people here. So anyways, the Slush Motorsports Festival is coming to Pikes Peak International Raceway this year on May 29th. This is their first year, and there's not a ton of information exactly on what this is going to be. But from what I can discern, it's basically a grid life festival, but like maybe turned down a little bit. So they're going to have drag racing and roll racing and the pit straight, actually. I'm pretty sure it is.
Oh, that's cool.
That's where PPIR does their drag racing. There's gonna be drifting, a burnout pit, a dyno you can rent out, open laps that they're actually doing the full Roval track.
So oh, that's cool.
I think I'm gonna sign up for that. And a car show. So there's gonna be people there probably playing music, lots of food vendors, and of course, as they say, big name content creators. I don't know. I actually don't know who Stradman is or Summit Life. I've never heard of those guys.
Yeah, those names are new to me too. Maybe one day we'll be on somebody's list of big name content creators.
Yeah, maybe we'll be the people going, I don't know who the fuck Religion of Speed is, but I guess they're a big name content creator. And that's literally no I'm not downplaying either Stradman or Summit Life. I'm sure they do a lot of cool shit. I just don't have enough time in my life to consume all the media out there at this point.
God, I wish I did though.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Just sit around and consume media constantly.
Yeah.
The dream.
That is the dream.
But Crispy Media is going to be there. We know who Crispy Media is and stuff, but countless others, including us, will be there. But we're not a big name yet. Anyways, yeah, it looks pretty cool. They're just trying to, looks like just do a motorsports festival of some kind, you know, just to come out and whatever you're into pretty much, either road racing, drag racing, drifting, you just want to come out and burn off some tires.
I'd love to come out. Yeah, I'll probably bring the 240 down and do some sliding.
Yeah, I mean, might as well.
Yeah.
After the show, we'll look at the pricing and stuff, try to get signed up for that. But I do miss, you know, being from Michigan, I miss just the good old burnout competition.
Right? You don't see a lot of that out here.
Not really.
But they were really cool. I remember the first one I went to, the guy who won had an old Toyota pickup with a 2J swap.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
The best part is the prize money doesn't usually cover the tires.
Oh, no. No, it really doesn't. I remember the little town next to where I grew up used to do a burnout contest. It was like on this hill. So, like, if you got going too much, you'd almost like slide backwards a little bit.
Oh, you could moonwalk.
You could, yeah. But I remember every year the cops would come out and do a burnout in one of their cars.
That is awesome.
Right?
See, that's the kind of community building we need.
Right? Yeah. It is. Yeah, they'd have the sirens going and everything and doing a big old burnout.
See, that's cool. The police had a built Mustang that they would run on the drag strip in my hometown.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I feel like a lot of cop places did that for a while.
Yeah, and that's the kind of outreach, you know, that, you know, if you want to keep kids from street racing, that's a good way to do it, because right, it's not just a wag your finger, it's a hey, look how fast I can go.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think they do that out at Bandimere here too. I think they do like a, you know, race the cops type night.
That's cool.
Clearly it hasn't stopped street racing, but you know, some people just want to break the law because it's, you know,
it's all about mitigating at that point.
Yeah, right. But yeah, we'll have this more information about Slush Motorsports Festival, which I think Slush is like a local car like group.
I haven't heard of them, and the video doesn't really give you a whole lot of information.
No, the little teaser video they put up here doesn't really tell you much, but you know, anybody that's willing to organize an event like this, which can't be easy with all those events and all those vendors and all that kind of stuff, that's a large event. Anybody's willing to do that is cool in my book.
Yeah, and you can pick up some cool stuff at those vendors.
Oh yeah,
probably. That's where I got that rice paddy Nismo hat.
If you don't know what we're talking about, then you don't follow Religious Speed on Instagram, and you should, because you would have seen that picture. Yeah, I'm interested in doing the open laps. It doesn't look like they're doing any timed stuff. I think it's just going to be like a, you know, just go out there and drive your car on track. But I do need some more practice before grid life this year on the PPIR Roval course, because I just need more practice at it.
Yeah, more practice. Yeah, that's how you get better.
There's a weird bump on the oval of that track. So there's a tunnel that goes into the infield. You know, that's your main entrance right there. Where that tunnel is, the oval track has dipped a little bit.
Oh.
It's sank, which sounds more severe than I think it is. It's just like that's how things settle over time.
Right.
Even concrete. But yeah, so I guess that would be turn one and two technically on the oval track, because it's right after the start finish.
Okay.
So between one and two, right in the middle of that banked corner, there's a dip.
Which you really don't need a big dip for it to feel really severe at that speed, at that suspension load.
Right. I need more practice with the dip, pretty much, because that you have to be in the right spot and have it set up right, because it will upset your car just a tiny bit. It's not a huge dip. I'm sure if it was bigger, they'd take care of it, you know. But it's just enough that it's like one of those weird bits of track that you have to figure out.
Yeah.
There's no like theory for it. You just have to like learn how to do it and learn how to confidently hit that corner.
Yeah, you just have to prepare for it. And that's kind of a home field advantage once you're used to it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping for that, because I was talking about grid life earlier in another episode in the Club TR series. Well, the Gears and Gasoline guys who were running street, who I were concerned about, that I was happy. I'm like, oh, cool. I have a class and they're going to be in street. No, somehow they stuck that Civic into Club TR.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not sure exactly how they're doing it, but it's I'm going to be racing against them. And that car is like fully prepped at this point. It has a one-piece front end on it now.
Oh, so yeah, they've got some funds into that one.
Uh-huh. Well, when Valvoline is sponsoring you, like, you got some money.
Are these the same Gears and Gasoline guys with the YouTube channel?
Yeah.
So the guy's sponsored by Advanced Auto Parts?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, is Advanced... What am I thinking is sponsored by Valvoline?
Well, their car might be sponsored by Valvoline, but their YouTube channel is usually, they always stop at Advanced and do services on their car.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You worked for Advanced, so you would know. You would know that. But yeah. So you know they got some money into that freaking car. So my hopes of coming in first in that class, I'm now hoping for second, because I just don't know if I can compete with that budget.
I mean, some of the cars they build, you know, you can tell there's a lot of money. I don't know if you saw the road trip, the FD road trip series.
I didn't watch it. That's kind of on my list of things to watch. But
yeah, one of them has a swapped K-Series with a turbo.
Yeah.
And then the other one's a rotary powered.
Yep.
And building a K-Series in a rear wheel drive and, you know, just building the motor and then putting it in an FD, that's a lot of funds to get that working right.
Yeah, because even I'm pretty sure they're using parts from K Miata, who make the Miata swap kits for that.
Okay.
And those guys really originated the rear wheel drive K swap, and now it's kind of expanded to other cars.
Yeah.
But even to do it with their kit in a Miata, man, you're still talking probably $7,000-$8,000 and on the low end.
And that's just for a stock K series,
right?
Let alone building up the motor to do the swap.
Yeah.
I do think it's funny that the people from Virginia, you know, are famous for taking road trips out of Virginia where they can drive.
Yeah. They're like, God, we gotta get the hell out of here.
It's like, we're going to get pulled over. We can't keep showing this.
Right. Anyways, Slush Motorsports Festival, like I said, drag racing, drifting, burnouts, dynos, open laps, car show, whatever you're into, I think this will cover you. And I'm excited to see, this is going to be the first year, so I wouldn't be surprised if it's a little small, because even grid life the first year was a little small, but I'm excited to see who comes out. I'm excited to meet some new people outside of the car stuff I normally do.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't really do drag racing. I don't really do car shows.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see those people and meet some new friends down there.
It's cool to mash all that up.
Yeah.
I think it'll be really neat even just as a spectator to be able to walk from event to event like that.
Right. Well, that was like when I started Religion of Speed here. That was kind of one of my things I wanted to kind of in the background keep in mind and hope to do was like bring people together of different automotive disciplines, because at the end of the day, we're all car people.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, we were just talking about the EPA trying to crack down on us. It's like, if we splinter and start hating on each other, then like, that's just makes us weaker and easier to pick off.
Absolutely. We're stronger united.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we all like cars and you know, gasoline engines or even electric cars, whatever it is. We all like it for pretty much the same reason. Let's stop hating on each other for silly things like, oh, stance cars are stupid. Well, you have a lowrider, bro. Like, you know, or like, well, yeah, how much more purposeful is your 1,000 horsepower drag car to a stanced car?
Right. Yeah. Both are very, very specific in their mission.
Yeah. Very limited in what you can do with them. So yeah. It's like, it's just different strokes, different folks. Don't yuck anybody else's yum.
I actually saw a great looking stanced Fit on the way here. It was the newer Fit, painted in that kind of army drab green, serious wide body kit.
Really?
Like, which is funny because the Fit's narrower than everything else on the road. So that just kind of brought it out to the width of everything else. But yeah, it looked great. I don't know who did his paint or if that was a wrap, but the car really came together well.
Huh. I want to see that car.
Yeah. I'll take a picture next time I see it.
Yeah. That sounds dope. So for our third and final racing series here today, we are going to be talking about Hoopty Cross. Not Hoopty X, which is what it says. It's actually Hoopty Cross. What is Hoopty Cross? It's Rallycross with beaters. It's Lemons Racing off-road, basically.
I saw in the video it said, run what you brung, and I love seeing that.
Yeah.
Especially when, you know, you're not going out there to compete. You're just going out there to see how far you can jump your Civic on a lift kit.
Right.
I'm excited to see this. Honestly, I wouldn't mind taking my pickup truck out there and beating it up.
Oh, yeah. That'd be good.
That'd be a lot of fun.
I think I want to have Iggy out there.
That could be great.
Right? That's
perfect.
I'll just raise the coilovers up a little bit.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think we should take that out there.
I might be able to figure out a bump stop lift kit for Iggy.
Maybe. I mean, honestly, the way those coilovers are, I think if I put them at max, it's actually a little bit higher than stock.
Oh, that's cool. So okay.
We could have some travel. But even then, it's just racing on dirt. Like, I don't think it's really, you know, crazy freaking Baja or anything. Yeah. But these guys, they're the same guys who did the Gambler 500.
Okay.
So it's the same people and same philosophy. It's cheap cars. You know, they have their like same $500 limit, I think, or something like that. But you can bring whatever.
Yeah.
So there's different classes. There's classes for your cheap cars. There's like an open class where you can just bring whatever.
Yeah, I saw somebody out there in a side-by-side.
Yep. I think that's part of the whatever class, but they might have their own side-by-side class too.
Okay.
And the point is, hey, we got this dirt lot or this run in the forest or whatever. Bring whatever the hell you want. Come out. Have fun. And just, I'm sure it's timed, but I don't think anybody cares.
Yeah.
It's more just about going out and thrashing cars.
Just being in this parking lot with a cooler full of beer sounds like a wonderful day.
Right? Yeah. I know. Even if we don't compete in this, I'm going just to hang out.
Yeah. This would be, these are the kind of people that I want to spend time with.
Right.
Absolutely.
I mean, I love this picture because there's a Del Sol with a guy throwing up the devil horns, fucking out the target top. In the background, we have a lifted MR2. We have some sort of Richard Petty-esque four-door 80s car. I don't even know what the heck that is.
It's obscured mostly by a dirt cloud.
Right? And yeah, there's just all sorts of freaking crazy cars. This one is, they do events all over the place. Michigan, Tennessee, Arizona, Florida, New York. A lot of East Coast I'm seeing here. But they are coming to Colorado too. Let me see. I forgot to bring up the date. There it is. July 10th and 11th. That's at IMI.
Okay.
So, you know, IMI gets down anyways.
Yeah. Yeah. IMI does not really, they don't give a fuck.
No. And also IMI has a lot of, dirt tracks there.
Yeah. Yeah. They've got more dirt tracks than paved.
Yeah. So I'm curious to see what they're going to be, like what track they're going to be racing on. Here we go. So there's four classes, the two-wheel drive class, that's arguably $500-ish. The four-wheel drive class, same thing. The hater class, which is anything over 500 bucks.
Shiny and new. That's hilarious.
Yeah, shiny, new, over 500 bucks. And the super soft class, which is side-by-sides, trophy trucks, race Jeeps, etc. So, legit race trucks.
And only $65 for a daily race pass?
$65. And it's a Friday-Saturday event, so you can pay 40 bucks to camp there, too.
That's the way to do it.
Yep. It's so cheap.
Yeah.
Go buy yourself a freaking $500 car off Craigslist. Come thrash it and,
yeah,
like, throw under, in the garbage, whatever.
Under $1,000, that's a great weekend.
Right? There's a lot stupider ways to spend money. Well, maybe not stupider. There's a lot less fun ways to spend
money. Yeah, we could be golfing.
Yeah. It's way better than golfing. Heck, that's cheaper than golfing.
Yeah, that's true.
$65?
It costs more to get onto a golf course.
Yeah, and I guarantee it's not as fun.
No.
So if you want to thrash a car, cheap car, in dirt at IMI, that is July 10th and 11th, Hoopty Cross. Look it up. I'll have it in the show notes. And nice. I think we're going to be there.
Yeah, that sounds like a blast. If I'll see. If I think I can drive my truck in it and still drive it home,
yeah,
that's something I might do.
Yeah, that would be the only problem is you do want to make sure you can get home.
Yeah. Yeah.
We need that truck to tow cars eventually.
We do. It's our support vehicle.
Yes. So there you go. There's three ways you can get yourself off the couch, into a car, and, well, at least in most of these cases, quote-unquote racing.
Yeah. Couple of months.
I don't know if Hoopty Cross is really considered quote-unquote racing. But
if somebody's standing there with the stopwatch.
True.
It's racing.
And then there's just a little bit of automotive news to cover. So we were talking last podcast about the Toyota and Subaru doing their joint debut thing.
Yeah.
And we were questioning what it was going to be.
Yeah.
Well, it was kind of the least exciting thing I was expecting, and it was just the GR86.
Hey, but in a world where the least exciting thing is a GR86.
It's true.
It's a pretty good world.
It could be a lot worse.
My favorite thing is that Toyota said they wanted to make sure it was different enough from the Subaru, and they gave it 4 more horsepower.
Yeah, they're like, well, no, this seems to be completely different. 4 more horsepower? Yes, yeah. There you go.
It's petty at that point.
It really is.
But it's hilarious. And hey, I'm glad that they're bumping the power numbers up. I'm interested to see how the new 86s are going to stack up to the new Z, because they're saying that this is going to be about 31,000.
Oh, really?
And so, you know, we're talking within $4,000 of a twin turbo Z with double the power.
Really?
Really,
how much this is going to be?
That's what they're saying. I mean,
oh yeah, 31.
If you want an optioned out BRZ or 86 now, you're gonna pay north of 30.
Man.
And they're saying starting at 31, so, you know, you'll get with a few options, you'll be at the base price of a Z.
Right.
Which, you know, I love my 86, but 400 horsepower is really hard to argue with.
Yeah, and see, that's where, man, I really like the 86, but that price, like, the only way this can stay competitive is that was, like, $6,000 less.
Right, and where the FRS started, at yeah, $25,000, exactly. That's what made it a competitive car. Unfortunately, there's just really not a lot of cheap rear-wheel drive options anymore to keep that price down.
Yeah.
I don't know if Hyundai's still running the Genesis Coupe or not.
I haven't heard anything about it in so long. I don't think they are.
Yeah. But, you know, at that point, you know, the Genesis Coupe base Turbo 4 was a direct competitor to the FRS. And now it's you need the competition to keep prices down and performance numbers up.
What does a new Miata start at?
I think the new Miata's in the mid-30s, too.
Really? God, why? Why are cars so expensive these days?
It really is a shame.
MSRP from 26.
Oh, from 26. That's not bad.
So I'm sure that'd be a, you know, stripped out model, but still.
Yeah.
That's a much better price than 31.
It is. And, you know, the Miata is faster than the 86 chassis, at least than the first gen.
Yeah.
Marginally faster. I think if you want the hard top Miata, you end up paying a little more.
Yeah, because the complexity and weight and all that good stuff.
But God, they look great.
They do.
The RF Miatas, they're gorgeous.
Little baby Jag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really do. They look like a little baby F-Type, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Especially the taillights. The taillights that really do it.
Yeah, and they give it that gorgeous sloping roof line.
Right. Something I wish all Miatas were available in a coupe version, but hey, you know, that's fine.
Hey, starting now.
Yeah. So, man, I guess I didn't read that part of the article where it's 31,000, because I think this might be the death of the BRZ FRS.
Now, this is the GR version, so if they've got a base model that's less,
then yeah, I think they're just calling it the GR86 though.
There isn't going to be just a non-GR version.
Yeah, I think that's just the name now. You know, it went from FRS to GT86 to
GR86.
To GR86.
Alphabet soup.
Yeah. Yeah, they haven't really been too good about their consistent branding.
luckily, the people who want these cars don't really care what they're called.
Yeah, no, they really don't.
Yeah.
I will say, though, the differences are subtle, but I do think I like the 8.6 version a little bit better than the BRZ.
I absolutely agree. The front end is nice. It's got that gaping maw. It looks like a little baby Aston Martin. it's probably going to handle as well as one.
Yeah, probably. I mean, that's the thing about these cars. They do handle really well, but man, just convincing people to pay that much money for 200 horsepower is just, I think it's going to be difficult in today's day and age.
What I wonder, though, is they said that the turbo model would have made it more expensive. What were they planning on charging for the turbo model?
Right?
Like, I mean, you probably, if they had a turbo version, they could probably get away with charging $40,000 for it just because of where it places it in the performance category.
I mean, if they would have made a turbo version and charged like 37, 38, like a little bit higher than the base Model Z.
Yeah.
I think that would have been very competitive because this is so much lighter than the Z is going to be.
Right.
That even if it made 330 or 300, it probably would still be just as fast.
Yeah, it'd be competitive. And you do get a back seat with the 8.6.
Oh, true.
It's not really usable.
Right, but it's there.
But it's there.
Yeah. Which, you know, the Z, because it's just a 370Z, so I guarantee they didn't add a 2 plus 2.
Yeah, so we're talking about cheaper on insurance and a lower cost to own.
True.
But when you're looking at these entry level prices, it's hard to see those numbers.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how well this is going to sell, but I hope it sells well. Of course I do. I don't want any sports car to sell poorly, but I think Toyota might be shooting themselves in the foot with that one a little bit.
Hopefully Subaru undercuts it.
Right.
Because I know that they typically, it's kind of weird the way they make the deal. You know, initially when the FRS came out, they imported, I think, 4 or 5 FRSs for every one BRZ.
Okay.
And so the BRZ was, you know, the more luxurious, more exclusive one that cost a couple $1,000s more.
Yep.
And then when they switched it over to the Toyota 86, the BRZ became the more ubiquitous model. So I'm interested to see which one of these models is going to be considered the luxury version.
Right. I'm sure they're going to stick to the Subaru. The Toyota is going to be... Toyota? What the fuck did I just say? Toyota will be the more kind of stripped out, you know, racer version.
With the GR name. That makes sense.
Yeah. Y'all good over there?
Yeah, just Dorito dust in my throat.
Yeah, okay, no worries. But while the GR86 was announced here... I did just see this today before we started recording. This is on Toyota's American website.
This is on the American website now, the GR Yaris.
Yes, but don't get too fooled. Right down here, pretty much what they did is they put this page on there talking about the GR Yaris. And it says on here, while the GR Yaris isn't coming to US, perhaps it's time the US got a Toyota hot hatch to call its own. The one that continues to push the boundaries of performance and one blah, 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 blah. So, basically, I think they're advertising for the Corolla hatch, basically.
Okay.
But I did put my information in down below. tell me more. Please tell me more. Oh, my God. Tell me more. Because I clicked on this site. By the way, this is our weekly or biweekly Toyota GR Yaris time that I need to talk about this car. Because I love this car. But so I was just so excited. Like, this is Toyota America. They're bringing it here. I mean, part of me did kind of panic for a second because, like I said before, now I have to buy one and I don't have the money for this right now.
That's true.
But yeah, so the thing is, I wasn't too excited about the Corolla GR that they've been rumoring because from what I've heard, it's going to be front wheel drive. It's going to be bigger, 4-door or 5-door hatch, you know.
NA.
No, it's supposed to have the same 3-cylinder turbo.
Okay.
So at least you get that, but... Besides that, I didn't hear anything else from the Yaris coming over. But they do talk in this article about how the GR Yaris has this 268 horsepower 3-cylinder. It has this crazy 4-wheel drive system and track performance and blah, blah, blah. So I'm wondering if the Corolla comes in all-wheel drive, even if it is a little bit bigger, that's still going to be a really cool little car.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. That's going to be the perfect Colorado Toyota.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm still going to have to buy it regardless. I need to get back into a Japanese car, and that'll check all the boxes I need. So,
be fun in the snow. It'll be fun on the autocross track.
Right.
You can then go out embarrassing WRXs.
Yes, with a 3-cylinder.
Yeah.
So... While I was excited that the GR Yaris was coming to America, it was just a tease from Toyota. One day.
That's kind of a cruel tease.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They put it on the website and they're like, you're not getting this.
But you could imagine what it'd be like if you did.
Could you imagine how awesome it would be if you could get this? You can't get this.
It's like, why? Why do this, Toyota?
Yeah.
Now, if they... Because I think the big problem is the Yaris in Japan and Europe is actually different than the Yaris we get here.
Okay.
Like, it's a completely different car.
It's a completely different body and everything.
Yeah. Okay. But if they just, like, stuff this drivetrain into our Yaris, cool. I'm down for that, too.
Stuff it into the Corolla.
Yeah.
Give us an all-wheel drive turbocharged hatchback.
Yeah, whatever.
Just
give us it.
Just make that happen.
But even if they do that, it might be delayed because... if you haven't heard, there is a global chip shortage.
Yes. Yeah. And it's driving up prices on everything.
Yes. So I'm a computer guy and I've been wanting to buy a new graphics card. And there's multiple reasons computer components have been like short stocked recently. But the chip shortage certainly isn't freaking helping this. And it's also not helping any of the car manufacturers get cars out.
Yeah, and it's causing an increase in prices, and they're basically saying that, you know, once production ramped back up after COVID, they realized, oh no, there's not enough chips.
Yeah.
Because all the chips had been going towards computers and game systems, because those still sold during COVID.
Yeah. Well, that and a lot of automakers actually, like, they cut back their orders for chips because they were expecting sales to be down a lot. And honestly, they didn't really drop all that much during the pandemic.
Yeah, it was just a brief moment, really. Yeah.
So the thing is, when they order chips or order any parts, actually, like they put those orders in like a year ahead of time.
Oh, wow.
And if they can't really change it at this point, like they put in that order, they can't just tell them, hey, we need more. The manufacturer's like, well, we set up our production line to make these units. We sold all of our units to different people.
Yeah.
You know, you got your allotment. Sorry. That's what you get.
This is what you asked for. That's what you got.
Yeah. So until like next quarter, basically, where they can start reevaluating their needs, we're going to have this chip shortage going on.
Yeah. So till the end of the year, we might see higher prices in cars.
Yeah, this is true.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just what we needed is higher prices of cars, because that wasn't getting ridiculous enough already.
Yeah, and I imagine this isn't doing great things for the already increasing used car prices.
Oh, man, yeah.
Yeah, because if new cars are up, then used cars are going to be up.
Right, exactly. It follows the same trend.
Yeah.
So, yeah, some in-demand models are reportedly being hit with a dealer markup as high as $10,000.
And they're saying that the Suez Canal jam might actually cause an additional... increase on this an additional shortage, because, you know, down the supply chain, you don't see those effects until after.
Right. Yeah. Cause even though like the Suez Canal is mostly trade between like Europe and Asia, but you know, eventually a lot of those products make it their way over here in some way, shape or form.
Yeah.
You know, so any sort of, German manufacturer or Euro manufacturer is going to be hit by this.
Yeah.
Even harder, or hit by that, I should say.
And we're not going to notice that until, you know, it hits their production, then it hits our supply.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, if European car prices go up, will we really notice? They're already so freaking expensive.
Yeah, they're really expensive. That's one thing I always think is funny when you watch old Top Gear.
Yeah.
Because they'll give you the price of a car in pounds, which you know are worth a lot more than the dollar. But it translates to how much we pay in dollars almost every time. You know, they're like, this is 30,000 pounds. And usually you can buy that car in America for about $30,000.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's insane. It must be really expensive to be an enthusiast in certain parts of Europe.
Yeah, I think it is. But also a lot of those Euro makes sell cheaper cars over there than they do over here.
Like the Mercedes A-Class and B-Class.
Yeah, but I feel like you could even get like a C-Class with like a four-cylinder, you know, for cheap over there. But I don't think that's their market over here, so they don't even send over their cheap stuff.
Yeah.
It's kind of like how you can buy a AMG, or you can buy a Mercedes G-Wagon that's not an AMG, but nobody does.
Yeah. Well, the people who have the money to spend on the G-Wagon, you know, they want the AMG tuning and the bulletproof glass.
Right. I would like to, like, if I was rich, I would buy a completely base model G-Wagon. because I just want to see what a base model G-Wagon is like.
What's it look like on the inside?
Yeah, what is this vehicle? Like, nobody ever sees them. They're all V12 twin turbo insanity.
Yeah.
So what's the fucking four-cylinder diesel one look like?
It'd be funny if it has crank windows.
Oh, that'd be hilarious. It's just like a Jeep. They just send you a Jeep.
Yeah.
They're like,
this is what you wanted, right?
They won't notice.
Just put a Mercedes badge on it.
Right? Hopefully this doesn't screw up all the enthusiast cars too much coming out. Because I can see them being like, well, we need to make more Ford trucks. We can't make, you know, Mustangs right now.
That would be sad. Just making, if all the chips that come into America end up in crossovers.
Yeah.
That's what people buy now.
Don't get me started on crossovers. I hate those cars.
I know. They're consuming the whole market.
Yeah, they're ruining cars in America. Yeah. God damn it, I'm old, all right?
I told you I sold 7 CVTs in the past 2 weeks.
Yeah.
5 of them were for Rogues.
Yeah, I believe it.
Yeah.
You know the Rogue, like, what was it, 2-3 years ago, was the best-selling car in America?
Really?
Yeah.
Best-selling car in America.
How sad is that?
That's... America, where has your taste gone?
And I think that was car, because I think the Ford F-150 takes the top rank every freaking time
for vehicles. Yeah, as a truck.
Yeah, as a truck. Yeah. Because people just buy F-150. I think they're buying them in bulk at Costco. I don't know what else going on. They sell so many F-150s. Yeah.
And I own one. You know, it's not the paragon of quality, but
right?
It takes a beating.
It's true, yeah. It
keeps on running.
There's a reason they outsell Chevy and Dodge, I suppose. All right, well... Do you have any updates on any project cars? You been doing anything?
I haven't done anything. I'm just going to do some prep work. Just do a, you know, chemical oil change on the 240 with some BG stuff before we take it down to the track tomorrow.
Yeah. Pretty much same here. Just got some work done today on Jelly Bean. And then just bolt check, oil, tires, you know, your normal stuff. Luckily, one thing I like about that car is I don't really have to do much to it usually. So,
yeah.
Just drive it down there and beat the snot out of it and drive it back.
It's great, right?
Yeah. It's nice. Like, as much as having like a dedicated race car is cool.
Yeah.
It's just nice to have less maintenance.
It is. It is. Which it's cool to have one or the other so you can make that choice.
Right. That's true too.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I will admit I forgot to check viewer mail, the mailbox, before I started this podcast. So if you sent something in, don't worry. We'll get to it next week.
All right.
We're kind of running over on time anyways, so maybe next week, if we have a whole bunch of mail, we'll just make it a viewer mail episode.
That'd be great. Whole episode of responding to viewer mail.
Yeah. And if you want us to respond to your viewer mail, you could send that to contact@religionofspeed.com. Whether you have feedback on the show, questions for us, questions you just think we could answer, shout outs to anybody who's helped you in the scene, we can get that read on the episode. So I think that's going to do it for us, Chris. This might be a little bit of a long episode, but, you know, we like to give our listeners what they pay for.
Absolutely. Although, you get everything you paid for.
And they didn't pay anything for it, so this is a damn good deal.
Yeah, it's a great value.
Religion of Speed, great value. All right, everybody, I want to thank the band Wheels for use of our theme song, Colors. You can check them out at wheelstheband.bandcamp.com, and that's going to do it for us today. And until next time, peace.